Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call on this Thursday evening, a special Washington Capitol edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, 9 p.m. on this 29th of April 2010. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you again to the next 45 minutes as we discuss the world of sports. Most of it will be focused, of course, on the Washington Capitals, who last night were on the wrong side of history as they became the first team in NHL history to be a number one seed and blow a 3-1 lead against a number 8 seed. Not the history that they wanted to make. The Capitals, for the second straight year, dropped Game 7 at the Verizon Center last year, forced them to the eventual Stanley Cup champion Pittsburgh Penguins to Sidney Crosby. This year, I won't be willing to put my life savings there. It won't be to the eventual Stanley Cup champions in terms of the Montreal Canadiens, who, you know, just a week or two before the regular season ended, was not even going to make the playoffs. They had to play their way into the playoffs. And to me, you know, I look at this game, watching the game was last night from start to finish. And we could talk about the power play or lack thereof on the Capitals. We could talk about missed opportunities, you know, first period in particular. We could talk about the goal that Ovechkin had called back. I thought it was a suspect call, but still, the officials made the call right away. We could talk about Alexander Simmons not showing up. Talk about Mike Green being a no-show. Talk about even Ovechkin, who some people think played well last night. I didn't see it. Not showing up. We can talk about, you know, the goaltender situation. There's a lot of reasons why the Caps lost this series. But to me, when I look at this team, when I look at them in the last past two game sevens over the course of now, you know, basically a year, to me, they are just not mentally tough enough right now. There are certain intangibles that every championship team has, whether it be hockey, football, baseball, basketball, whatever sport. And whatever those intangibles are, the Caps just don't have them. I mean, I don't think they're mentally tough enough. I don't think, for that matter, they're physically tough enough. And I'll get to the physical aspect, you know, a little bit later on as we head into this, you know, off season. But the Caps just, they, you know, and again, I don't know if you can teach that. You know, you can't coach that. That, I guess, that's just something that develops, that comes from within, that a team has over time, or you can bring in some players with championship experience, I guess, and, you know, help them show some of the younger guys the ropes. You know, I guess that's a way of you know, improving that. But the Caps just, I mean, they just don't, you know, when you think about it, think about this over the last 2 years. They had a 2-0 lead over Pittsburgh last year with home ice. So I know it's overrated, but it's not that big a deal. But it's still, you'd rather have Game 7 in your building than it to be on the road. They blow that and get smacked around in Game 7 to Pittsburgh 6-2. Okay, you lose to Sidney Crosby, you lose to the eventual Stanley Cup champions. All right, and you take a positive step in the right direction. The Caps had a good, very good season last year. This year, you blitz through the regular season. You have 121 points. You have the MVP of the league. That's going to be MVP of the league, who I don't think should be, but it's going to be MVP of the league, and Alexander Ovechkin. And something I will get to him later on. And you play a team that I know they played great defense, and I know the goaltender stood on his head. I understand that Halleck played as well as any goaltender has played in recent memory. You know, 31 saves. Out of 134 shots is out of this world. I understand that. And I'm not trying to take anything from him or the Montreal Canadiens, for that matter. But, man, I mean, let's be honest. The Montreal Canadiens were a mediocre hockey team. I mean, Pittsburgh right now, I mean, if I'm Pittsburgh Penguins, I have to be laughing right now having to play the Montreal Canadiens. I mean, the Canadiens are a team, there is no way in the world that the Washington Canadiens were supposed to be the Washington Capitals. There's no way. I mean, this is one of the great upsets in the history of hockey. in 92 years, this has to be one of the great upsets ever. Ever. And we've seen one eight seeds beat one seed before. But this one, to me, stands out. And you blow three games to one lead with two games at home and against a team that, frankly, did not play well on the road, did not play well at home themselves. I mean, there's something wrong with that pitcher. And again, this idea last night that Alexander Ovechkin played well. Oh, he had 10 shots. He had an assist. He was fired up. He got a goal call back. Alexander Ovechkin was a no-show for the first two periods. He had a very good third period. But those first two periods, he was missing action. He was getting shots blocked left and right. He did not have his hit. I mean, he did not impose his will on that game the first 40 minutes at all. He had an average game. To me, an average game, which is frankly not good enough. When you're being called the greatest player on the face of on the planet, which he's not, okay? Now, I don't want to hear that argument anymore about that deal. The Ovechkin-Crosby argument right now is null and void, as far as I'm concerned. You have one guy right now in Crosby who's dominating the playoffs, who's leading the team in Pittsburgh, who's not as good as they were last year, and who, you know, has a Stanley Cup under his belt already at 22, okay? Compared to a guy in Ovechkin who now has lost back-to-back home games, game sevens at home. You think Wayne Gretzky is losing? You think that's going to happen to Wayne Gretzky? You think that's happening to Bobby Hull, Mark Messier, Mario Lemieux? For that matter, even a guy like Peter Forsberg or Joe Sackett, you think they're going to let somebody, you think they're going to let two teams come back-to-back years and beat them in their own rink 2 years straight in a game seven? There's no way that's happening. If you are a great, truly great, superstar legendary player, that doesn't happen. It just does not happen. In back-to-back years. Maybe once, but not back-to-back years. He has one goal and a couple assists in two deciding seven games. One goal and a couple of assists. And that goal last year was when the score was 5-0 Pittsburgh. Made it 5-1. The game was over. You know, it looks good when he's scoring and he's, you know, fighting guys in the regular season. He's, you know, doing all this stuff. And that speaks to the Capitals team. You know, the Capitals, you know, they were a dominant opposite team. They would come back, you know, 3-1, 4-0, 3-0. You know, game in, game out, and they would look good doing it. But that doesn't win championships. You know, Capitals need, to me, if they want to take that next step, they need to get rid of one of these big offensive players that they have, and bring in a guy or a couple guys that have, you know, if you can, to have championship experience. And that are tough, and there are guys who don't care about scoring. You have to bring in defensemen who don't care about scoring, who just want to focus on playing defense, being physical, and giving this team an edge that it does not have right now. Capitals' problem is, their number one problem to me, other than the goaltending situation, which I will get to, is the fact that they have too many guys who are looking to score. You know, they have a bunch of guys who, if they don't score, don't do anything else. You know, Mike Green doesn't score. He doesn't play great defense. Alexander Simmons doesn't score. He doesn't do anything else. Anything. He doesn't set up other people. He doesn't, you know, he's not hitting anybody. He's not getting, I mean, he doesn't do anything else. And you have too many guys on, you have too many scorers on your team. Too many. You need guys like a Bill Guerin. You know, you need a Claude Lemieux. You need a Scott Stevens. They need those players cut from that cloth. Guys who don't care about scoring, who can score if given the opportunity, but don't. That's not what they're on the ice for. You need guys who, again, be willing to knock somebody out. You don't need a Don Brashear or Marty McSorley. Not guys that are going to spend a million, you know, the guys are going to spend the whole game in the penalty box. You know, he don't need that. You know, Alexander Ovechkin can be his own bodyguard. But you need to get more defensive. They have too much offense on this team. And it's something, and again, there's no excuse not to be able to pick up any, not to be able to pick up better defensive players. They have, they're deep in the goalie position. They have great prospects coming out of, out of their farm system. And they're loaded as far as talent offensively. They can move one of those guys and get a defense. They can downgrade a little bit offensively and get better and get better defense players. There's no question. They have all the resources in order to do so. All the necessary resources. As far as the goaltending situation, I thought it was a problem coming into the playoffs. You know, when Boudreaux basically says, "Hey, you know, we have two goaltenders. We're gonna need both of them," and you know, and that was it. To me, listen, I've never seen a team, and they, if somebody correct me if I'm wrong. You can go to, you know, my Facebook page, William Gerard, www.facebook.com/SyrilQuinn, or Twitter at, or hit me up at Twitter.com/WilliamGerald and comment on this. But I've never seen a team win a Stanley Cup with, you know, having basically trading goals, not trading goaltenders, but basically flip-flopping goaltenders, but not having a clear-cut number one. I've seen teams have pulled their goaltenders and have one lead into the cup. Would that not be, I mean, you know, Detroit won a Stanley Cup a couple of years ago when Dominic Hasek came in as a starter, played poorly. Chris Osgood, you know, picked up the slack and, you know, and led and helped lead them to the Stanley Cup. Helped, you know, played well enough and helped, you know, they won, you know, won the championship. But that was not the intention of playing Chris Osgood. You know, to me, Boudreaux has no trust whatsoever in Jose Theodore. None. Neither, I mean, he couldn't trust him as far as he could throw him. You know, coming into the series, you know, Theodore doesn't have a longer leash. Playing well, you know, had a great record since January, and blah, blah, and so on and so on. He gives up two goals a game, two for two shots, and we never see him again. You can't wait for Semyon Varlamov to grow up and become a big-time goalie. You can't waste years where you are championship caliber waiting for him to be a goalie. If I'm the Capitals, I get rid of Theodore, keep Varlamov, Muroff, bring in a championship, a guy, a goalie who I trust, who I think I can win a championship with a hired gun, so to speak, and say, "Hey, you know, let's go for it right here, right now." If that guy isn't good enough, hey, then you put in Varlamov. You can have that guy for a couple of years, next thing you know, he's retired or something, then Varlamov is ready to take over the mantle for good. That's what I would do if it were my team. Because right now, you don't have a goalie right now. You don't have a goalie right now. Yeah, it's just like a quarterback situation. You think you have more than one quarterback, you don't have any. You have two or three quarterbacks. Yeah, we got two hit deep. No. Yeah. I mean, it's good to have a nice backup, but you can't. You can have a one starter, one backup. You can't have two starters. You can't have two starting goaltenders. You have one, you have a guy, you have a clear cut number one and a guy that who is capable in case of an injury or that guy just plays terrible. That's what you have to have in the NHL. It doesn't work with this two goaltender system. It never works. And it will never. I don't think it will ever work that way. But again, this is a tough pill for the Capitals to swallow. There's no way in the world they were supposed to lose to this team. This is an inferior hockey team that they lost to. You know, this is not a team that underachieved over the course of the regular season and it turns out that they were better than their record. No. Montreal was exactly the team that we thought they were as far as their record. I mean, they were no better than that. They're a mediocre hockey team. Who, you know, listen, I give him credit for the defense. The goaltender was just amazing. I give him credit for that, but there's no way it should be the Washington Capitals. No way. So this is going to be a long summer for the Capitals, a long summer. And I'll tell you right now, next year, Bruce Boudreau, listen, his job could be on the line next year. And I think if he doesn't get this team to the Stanley Cup, that you have a new coach come 2010, come 2011, 2012. So if they get off to a bad start next year, he could be on. He could be on his way out. NHL, they would not hesitate to fire coaches. And you know, I see Stanley Cup winning coaches get fired. Boudreau has a losing playoff record. Okay, he has a losing playoff record. Keep that in mind. And this is back-to-back years where, you know, last year I might even call it a major disappointment. It was a slight disappointment, not a major disappointment. This is an utter embarrassment right here. Losing to the Canadiens. You cannot lose to the Canadiens. Can't. So some interesting decisions to make in the offseason in regards to some of the free agents, some of the guys, you know, they moved Theodore, they re-signed Simmons, pick up a couple of, some defensemen. Very interesting to see what the Capitals do come this summer. Still to come on this first edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call, Thursday night edition. NBA takes forefront. We're talking about the NBA. We're also talking about Cleveland. You have a major problem. We'll talk about that. And also Tiger and Phil go at it at Quile. We'll discuss that a little bit. That's still to come and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. 16 minutes after the 9 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you to 45-minute edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. We will be back in our regular Saturday place Saturday morning come May 1st. So tune in for that. Then you will probably be around either 9 o'clock or 9:30. We'll see how it's up. Definitely get that information to you before tomorrow's out. So we'll be back in our regular Saturday place as we got a little mini hiatus for the past week, for the past 10 days or so. We'll be back on talking a lot going on this weekend in regards to just the Kentucky Derby, baseball, NBA playoff, NHL, second round is getting underway as we speak as Detroit San Jose is hosting Detroit. As far as the NBA goes, right now, San Antonio is all over Dallas. Last time I looked at the score, it was 39-19. Dallas folding like a cheap suit. This is why I cannot trust Dallas to get to the NBA Finals. I mean, people say, you know, they made a good trade. They get Caron Miller and Brandon Haywood. But, you know, Dallas is just, you know, and I talked about mental toughness in regards to the Capitals, but Dallas is another team that does not have what it takes. You know, beyond having talented players and a deep bench, they just don't have it. I mean, Dallas, in terms of winning a championship, there's one of these teams that, again, they face a little adversity and they fold up. You know, there's no way that San Antonio should have been able to dominate the series when San Antonio has dominated the series. I mean, San Antonio could win the series. I would say, they could win it. It's not out of the runs possibility. Especially if you have, Ginobili, Duncan, and Parker all the time. Yeah, I mean, it's not crazy. But San Antonio has been, ever since game one, they've flatly outplayed Dallas. And in, games four and five, Tim Duncan, didn't do anything. And game five, you didn't get anything out of Parker, Duncan, or Ginobili, basically. All of them had suspect games. You allow a guy like George Hill to score 29 points. You can't have George Hill. Who the hell is George Hill? He scored 29 points in a game four that you absolutely had to have in order to win the series. You got George Hill scored 29 points. I mean, are you kidding me? But again, I guess that's a lot of credit. San Antonio, over the course of the season, looked dead as a doorknob. They looked older. It seemed like they were getting older by the minute. Probably they've gotten healthy. Probably they've done a great job. They have a very good bench. They get production out of all these young players. The Ron Blair, George Hills of the world. And right now, I mean, it's not out of the possibility that they could end up in the finals. I still favor the Lakers, you know, but they're, to me, at worst, they're going to be in the Western Conference Finals. They're going to win this series. They'll be either Phoenix or Portland. That's not that. That Phoenix series, if they play Phoenix, that would be a great series to watch because those two teams have had some nights, some good battles over the course of, you know, over the course of the past decade. But they'll beat Phoenix. There's no question in my mind that they will. Possibly you can look at another LA San Antonio final, Western Conference final, but still a long way to go before we get there. Phoenix has a chance to close out Portland tonight. I expect them to do so. I think, you know, Portland has played well, been valiant, but I think Phoenix will close the deal tonight. Of course, tomorrow you have the Lakers trying to finish off a tough Oklahoma City team. Denver, Utah trying to finish off Denver and Utah and Milwaukee and Atlanta. I'll say one thing about this Milwaukee-Atlanta series, because it is a nothing series, because neither one of those teams are going to do anything long-term, but it is time to break up Atlanta. I mean, how could Atlanta allows a Milwaukee team to go into their home gym with no Andrew Bogut, 9 points up with 4 minutes left, and they find a way to lose that game? I mean, there's no way you can lose that game. And to me, Atlanta has gone as far as they can go with this particular group. As far as they can go. I don't care what happens with free agency as far as LeBron and Wade and Bosh. Atlanta, whatever those players do, whatever their teams do, Atlanta's not going to be good enough. So, you know, they might as well just, you know, not even try to sign Joe Johnson, go in a different direction, and somewhat start over. They've reached their peak as a franchise. Had a nice run, you know, played a good series against Boston a couple of years ago, made the second round last year, but they got bashed by Cleveland. But this team is just, they just can't score to add points. And they, you know, they get to a lot of Milwaukee. Milwaukee basically was, you know, dead man walking coming into the playoffs with their injuries and not having a home court advantage. But I give Milwaukee a lot of credit. They're a tough team. Brandon James has played extremely well. Simons has played well. And right now they're really taking it to Atlanta as they're taking control of that series and have a chance to wrap it up tomorrow in Milwaukee. Cleveland, you know, got some bad news as far as I'm concerned. Of course, it wasn't, you know, they're going to play. LeBron's going to play in that second round series versus Boston. And again, we will do a lot on that series come Saturday because the Cleveland-Boston rivalry. Cleveland-Boston is the best rivalry in basketball right now. The two teams hate each other. They played that great epic game 7 a couple of years ago in Boston Garden for LeBron and crazy Paul Pierce had a great game. So with that, I'm very much looking forward to that series. We'll do a lot on it come Saturday. Also review, you know, Friday's games as well. But, you know, you gotta be concerned about this elbow injury. It was revealed today LeBron had a strained and bruised elbow. It goes numb, you know, it can go numb at any time. Shot the free throw left handed, which I thought was kinda extra. I mean, you know, did it go numb right after he nailed the first free throw? He had to shoot it left-handed. But anyway, that could cost him the championship. There's no question about it. I mean, I'll be very interested to watch him. He has not had a period of time. This has been ongoing for 2 weeks, but he has not had a period of time where he has been missing shots, where he's had to miss time, due to the at this time in the playoffs. I wonder if that's the reason why they kept him out for those remainder of the regular season, basically the last 4 or 5 games. I wonder if I think it might have been a high back injury. That's probably why he was sitting. So it would make perfect sense now that I think about it. So, again, this has been an ongoing injury for LeBron, and something to be concerned about. I mean, you know, picture him going up for a game with a shot, and then all of a sudden his elbow goes numb, and he hits hits the side of the backboard with a jump shot or something. I mean, if this injury is what they say it is, that it can go numb at any time. You don't know when, you know, it can start hurting him. It'd be very interesting to watch again. That's gonna be a great series as now the real season begins in the Eastern Conference. I mean, you're only going to get, again, Eastern Conference, you're only going to get two compelling series. I mean, Cleveland, Boston, and you're probably going to get, you know, Cleveland, Orlando. No, Orlando and Boston would be great as well, but more like you're probably going to get Cleveland and Orlando. So those would be your two series to look forward to in the Eastern Conference. Let's say East has been a joke. Orlando goes to Charlotte. You know, Dwight Howard bitching and moaning about foul calls. He needs to shut up and just play basketball, play smart basketball, not worry about the officials. And some of the fouls he's picking up are just dumb fouls. I mean, it's so obvious. You know, when you grab somebody and toss them halfway into the third deck, basically, in some of these fouls after the play is being called. He makes himself a target with some of his plays that he does. You know, some of the screens, a lot of these fouls are after the play is over. So he needs to get that, he needs to get that taken care of before Orlando has to face off against Cleveland. Whoever they play, whether it be Atlanta or Milwaukee, yeah, has no chance against Orlando. I mean, they really don't. They have no, either one of them have a matchup. That will be a walking apart 5-game series at most for the Orlando Magic. So Orlando should be in pretty good shape going heading towards the Eastern Conference finals. As far as a couple teams that got eliminated, Chicago and Miami, I thought Chicago played a very good series. They just were outclassed by just a better basketball team in Cleveland, with the exception of game four. Chicago basically was right there with Cleveland. Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah are going to be great for the next 10 to 15 years. If I'm Dwayne Wade, and it kind of connects with Dwayne Wade, who got absolutely one man gang in the Miami Boston series, I would seriously consider signing with Miami, with Chicago. I mean, I really would. I mean, Miami, you're not going to win there. I don't know. Like, I know it's South Beach, but to me, I mean, Wade makes it sound like they're going to sign a big player before he even considers resigning with them. They're going to have to pick up a Stoudemire. They're going to pick up a Chris Bosh. You know, Joe Johnson's not enough. They need somebody on the inside. But they've really done a terrible job at surrounding him with good players. And they, you could say they're waiting for 2010, I guess. But for the most part, ever since that championship team they had back in 2006, they have been, you know, they've been a joke. I mean, they've been, you know, first round and out when they've made the playoffs, and certainly Mr. Wade is tired of it, as he just, you know, sees himself in that Kobe Bryant predicament, that, you know, wasted, you know, his talent, his prime years on a team that's a first round, a one and done type team. He's definitely not going to have that for next year. So, you know, Miami, you know, when July 1st rolls around, I look for Miami probably to be the first team to sign somebody. You know, if not Cleveland, if Cleveland doesn't sign LeBron James, I would look for Miami to be the first team to go ahead and sign a play and sign one of these big free agents. Of course, you have also Tiger Woods returns as for the first time basically in 3 weeks after the Quail Hollow Championship. He's 9 shots out right now, 2 over. Mickelson is 2 under, 5 shots out. Woods is going to have to maintain, if he's going to get his game back, he's going to have to maintain a consistent schedule. I mean, you can't be taking, you know, basically a month between tournaments. I know he sets all his game, he sets everything around the majors. I understand that, but you know, you can't. You know, golf is all about timing and preparation, practice. You know, even for him, you know, you can't take as much time off and expect to win tournaments that long and win majors for that matter. So you're going to have to get on a regular schedule in order to get ready for the U.S. Open. But again, he hasn't played since the Masters, and right now he is struggling mildly in the Quail Hollow Championship. That'll be something to keep your eye on this weekend. Of course, a lot of some baseball news as far as, I will get into the Ryan Howard thing tomorrow. So I'm going to tease you for basically the better part of the next, you know, 36 to 48 hours as far as that, 36 hours as far as that goes. I have a lot to say about that signing from Philadelphia Phillies. And if you're a Philadelphia Phillies fan, you should, I'll give you a hint, you should not be happy if you're a Philadelphia Phillies fan. I know that sounds crazy. I'll you know, get into that. I'll embellish on that come Saturday morning. How about the Washington Capitals going down, but how about the Washington Nationals? Nationals playing good baseball right now, a couple games over 500, despite the fact that they've been outscored in terms of runs given up and runs scored, but who cares? They're over 500, playing well, getting some good decent pitching. It's only a matter of time in regards to the Nationals that you could keep Strasburg in the minors. I mean, right now he's 20 with the minors. Now, good playing well might take some of the heat off them to bring him up. But the guy right now, you can't tell me the Nationals have five better pitchers than Steven Strasburg. You can't tell me that. I can't buy that. So I expect to see him before the month of May is out. I expect to see him before Memorial Day, put you that way. Right now, again, he is absolutely toying with the minor leagues. You know, I think last year he was 3-0 with a .52 ERA or something like that, something ridiculous. It's not even fair. He's like a man amongst boys as far as that goes. So expect to see him up before too long. The Mets are playing good baseball. Mets are, I believe, 13-9. They're playing, again, 1-7 straight. Swept the Dodgers. Absolutely had their way. So they have a big series coming to this weekend, coming up against Philadelphia, who was able to salvage a game yesterday against the San Francisco Giants, 7-6 in 11 innings. This will drive you crazy if you are a baseball fan. If you're a Giant fan or you're somebody within that organization, you beat Philadelphia back-to-back games, you beat Roy Halladay, you have Cole Hamels on the ropes, you have 4-1 with Lincecum pitching into the eighth inning. Lincecum, you know, gives up a couple of base runners, he gets pulled out of the eighth. You have 4-1, and you're about to sweep the defending champions, which would be a nice sweep early in the season, and your bullpen can't hold it. Jason Worth gets a 3-run double. Next thing you know, you lose 7-6 in 11 innings. It's only April, about to be May, but those are kind of losses that just have you pulling your hair out if you are a Giants fan. I mean, that was tailor-made to have to be a sweep. Phillies, though, get the win 7-6 in that particular game, though. Giants still right there as far as first place goes in the National League West. San Diego playing well. Dodgers struggling right now. Giants have a big series this weekend coming up against Colorado. Yankees, Tampa Bay is playing great right now. Yankees struggling a little bit. I don't think it should make too much of that. Tampa Bay right now. It's going to be very interesting to watch Tampa Bay as we get further along in the season, especially as we get around the trading deadline. Because right now they're going to be good. They're going to have a good season. So, you know, you probably won't see them make moves, trading some of these guys like a Crawford and what have you today. So I wonder if that motivated them to, you know, play well. If they thought about that, you know, that'd certainly be a question to ask, you know, Joe Madden and the rest of some of their players, because they're playing great right now. Had the best record in all of baseball. Cliff Lee is scheduled to return, I believe, tomorrow. You know, coming off the DL, has not pitched this year, so he's scheduled to return for Seattle, so that he should fit in nicely along with Felix Hernandez. So that definitely will give them a boost. Again, very early in the season, I don't think you get a good feel of baseball until, it takes at least 50 or 60 games to get a good feel of what the direction that the season's going in. I think it would say at least 50 to 60 games. And you have to get into June, I think middle of June. Once the NBA finals are over, then I think you get a better gauge of the baseball season. Right now, it's just far too early. I mean, you know, some of the teams are going to be good. They're going to be right there. But for the most part, I think it's just extremely early to be out to be gauging where these teams and what direction that these teams are going. So, should be a busy sports weekend. Again, we'll have a lot to talk about come Saturday morning. Either it's going to be, the show's either going to be at 9 or 9:30. I haven't decided on that yet. Certainly, we'll get that information to you tomorrow. In terms of the return of the Saturday morning wake up call, actually on Saturday. I think my last couple of shows have been on, you know, I think Monday and Thursday, but we return to being on Saturday, come May 1st. And we will end with our final segment. Of course, we return to where we began. That's with the Washington Capitals. Capitals go down 2-1 to the Montreal Canadiens. And again, I'm as shocked as everyone else is around the hockey world, especially in the Metro DC area. There's no way the Capitals should have lost this game. I thought the Capitals would win this game, but the thing that scared me from a Capital perspective was the fact of how well Montreal had played at the Verizon Center in this series. Remember, they win game one. They should have won game two, up 4-1. Capitals have a great comeback and win in overtime. They beat the Capitals in game five. So that bothered me going into that game. They just seemed to have a high level of comfort, which doesn't bode well for a home team. I mean, when, you know, being at home supposed to make the home team uncomfortable with the crowd, but that. The Canadians just felt right at home playing at the Verizon Center, and it showed last night as they got off to the all-important good start when you are the road team trying to win a hockey game. You know, scoring that first goal was huge for them. That was huge on that power play, that 4-on-3, and then of course they scored. You know, they basically lock up the game with 3 minutes left to go 2-0. At that point, you knew. I thought the Capitals were in trouble when they were not able to, at least at worst, go into the third period tied. You know, 1-0 after the first period. Oh, okay. You know, they can make that up in a heartbeat. But going to that second intermission down 1-0. At that point, I think the Capitals were in for a dogfight. I thought if Montreal was going to win it, it was going to be that one-goal type game, 3-2, 2-1. I thought if the Capitals won, they could just blow Montreal's doors off. That was not the case, as their offense bogged down with Yaroslav Halak standing on his head. You talk about a goalie standing on his head. What the performance that he gave was the definition of a goaltender just dominating and taking over a series. And when you talk about mental toughness, this is where Montreal had it, and this is where the Washington Capitals did not. Earlier in this series, Halak was benched in that game three when the Capitals just went crazy and blew Montreal away, you know, in that particular game. So Halak gets benched. They bring in Price. You know, they bring in Price. He doesn't play that great. Bring back Halak. And from game five on, Halak was the best player. He was by far and away the best player on the ice. I mean, you talk about stopping 131 out of 134 shots. That's unheard of. It's unheard of. Against the best offensive team in hockey, it just doesn't happen every day. I mean, he was very good last night. But to me, the Game 6 performance was something that every Canadian fan will remember for as long as they live. That night, he was as good as any goalie has ever been. I think that night he got into the Capitals' head. I think from that game on, even last night, he was in the heads of the Washington Capitals. I mean, how many times have you seen Alexander Ovechkin have 10 shots in a game and not score a goal? Yeah, I mean, it doesn't happen. Have 10 shots and not score a goal. So I really thought that he got into the head of the Capitals and how they shot the puck and not taking normal shots that they were taking. thought, again, the Montreal defense was off the charts. I mean, you block 41 shots, you kill power plays when they did, that 6-on-4 at the end of the game. Those two power, those back-to-back power plays that Washington had in the second period were huge. I thought, Washington had a chance. If Washington could have came into that third period tied, I think they would have won the game. But the fact that they were always playing from behind, basically the last two games, they were playing from behind. They were dominated in that game six, losing 4-1. And they played from behind in that last two games. And when you have a hot goaltender, you're playing against a hot goaltender playing from behind, that's a recipe for disaster. And it did not turn out well for the Washington Capitals, who will enter a very interesting offseason. I mean, they have a lot of decisions to make. I think they're too offensive-minded. I think they need to get more grittier. I think they need more defensive-minded players. And I think they just need to get rid of one of these big offensive players. Again, obviously Ovechkin is, untradeable. I mean, you can't trade him. I would keep Ovechkin, Backstrom, and Green in that order. The rest of those guys can be had for the right price, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you can get the rest of those guys. I mean, the rest of those guys would be Simmons, whoever, Fleischmann, Brooks, Leish, whoever you want to name. Listen, they can be had. Theodore, Knubel. I mean, those guys, none of those guys are untradeable as far as I'm concerned for the right price. But certainly they need to upgrade the defense in order to go to that next level. And they need, it's about time for them. Like, you can be, it's one thing to be young, but, I mean, especially in hockey, you need some experienced guys. I mean, you need guys that have been there before. You need some tough guys. You need guys that are mentally tough to go through the grind of playing four grueling series 2 months, basically, and trying to raise that Stanley Cup. It is by far and away, out of all the sports, the most grueling of postseasons. Easily. So, they're going to have to bring in some players who understand what it takes to win a championship. And the bottom line is, Alexander Ovechkin is going to have to be great when he has to. I mean, it's one thing during the regular season to put up all these numbers. It's one thing during the postseason, have a great game one or a great game two. But when the money's on the table, game sixes, game sevens, it's put up a setup time. I remember Mark Messier in that 94 conference final against the Devils, game six hat trick. For all the world, had the prediction, we're gonna win. I'm gonna do this, produce. Forget about the prediction, just the fact that it is the production. The great players come up when it counts the most. That's why they're great players. So again, we will be back on Saturday, either 9 or 9:30. Enjoy the rest of your night. Enjoy the hockey. Enjoy the basketball. I will see you Saturday, Mayday, on the next Saturday morning wake-up call. So long. See you in a couple of days.